Hello and welcome to our talk about Karl Rahmer.
My name is Martina Weinhardt. I'm the curator of this exhibition, and I'm very happy to have on my side the expert on Karl Rahmer. Oh, yes, you are. Maria Cristina Mundici. She's the head of the Archivio Karl Rahmer in Turin, and she founded her expertise on Karl in many ways. I'm very happy that she's the person who knew Karl Rahmer in her life and worked also on an exhibition on Karl Rahmer in Amsterdam at the Stedelijk Museum, and just recently did, I think, the biggest job ever because she assembled together the catalogue raisonné of Karl Rahmer's work in two tomes. So this was really the work of many, many years, and that was, I'm standing on your shoulders, I have to say. I remember visiting you in Torino, completely overwhelmed, and we were in your house and working for hours and hours and hours through the thousands of works of Karl. How many works are in the catalogue raisonné?
In the catalogue there are 1,600 works, but they are not all of the works by Karl Rahmer, because in the catalogue we put together a lot of sheets. Karl Rahmer from the 90s on often did some drawings with a very easy hand, and sometimes with the same topics, the same style. So in the catalogue we didn't put all of them, but we did just a chapter about this kind of series. Because Karl was very, very generous, so she often did this kind of drawings for friends during a dinner or as a present. So there are a lot of this kind. But the corpus, the major works, are 1,600, 1,700.
But as we are here presenting the first real retrospect exhibition of Karl Rahmer, I think we have to start one step before that in introducing a little bit who Karl Rahmer was, maybe just a frame. She worked incredibly long because she lived an incredibly long life. She was born in 1918 and died 2015, so actually she worked for over 70 years. Yeah. The earliest work in our exhibition is from 1936, and the latest from 2002. So you have kind of
the entire career of the artist, and she always worked, always worked. She did that. That was her life. The art was really her life. And she was very poor too.
Yeah, but let's begin at the beginning. You said she started working when she was very young. So her earliest work is from 36, and she
36,
was and she was born 1918. So
yes,
there you
she
have
was 16.
She was 16, and her earliest work, the Aquarelli, made her famous, and they are kind of very special in many, many ways. Maybe you can talk a little bit about this the body of work.
The so-called Aquarelli, which is watercolors, are the first series, the first production by Karl Rahmer, and they are on sheets, that kind of sheet she could find in her daily life. For instance, they are pages of book or something like that, because she had not anything very special related to art. And very, very special are the topics of the watercolors too. The topics are mostly, as you can see even in the special section here in the exhibition, the topics are sexual subjects with male or female organs, with a couple of people of different genre. And you must think that she was drawing this kind of things in the 30s. And you know what was going on in the 30s in Italy. And the time the fascism was on, and of course it was not the best atmosphere to accept that kind of subjects. And actually, Carol spoke of an exhibition which couldn't open because the works were refused before the exhibition opened. And from that time, which is, this exhibition is supposed to be held in 1945. From that time on, this kind of work never have been ever exhibited, never. Only in the late 70s, these sheets appeared, and from that time they started to be present in many exhibitions and to be presented to the public. And she kept these kind of works as a sort of secret works, maybe because they were refused at the beginning, and Carol Rama didn't want to be refused. So she...
The main question is also how could a very young woman with a very bourgeois background come to these kind of depictions? And she herself spoke about that also many, many times. And maybe we should look into her biography a little bit, because she explained these kind of depictions many times with her own history that changed at a certain point very drastically.
Yes, the biography is important for Carol Rama, but we haven't to make the mistake to think that the work by Carol Rama is a sort of mirror of her biography. Biography is important, and to her is a sort of storage of topics she used and reused during all her life, but her work is not her biography. Anyway, she was from a very bourgeois family. The father had a firm, but the firm collapsed at the end of the 20s. And from that time, the family was very poor. So Carol Rama passed from a very rich situation, a lot of status symbol, like an important car, beautiful dresses, and so on, to a very poor situation. And this was, of course, something which forced her very much. But at the same time, like Natalia Ginzburg wrote once, that unhappy families are the incubator of stories, of many stories. And as I said before, this early years of Carol Rama were a sort of storage of topics which came and recame. And she lived some situation, possibly, even if she never talked about those. But she lived some situation which she then featured in her works later, sometimes in more direct ways, or sometimes in with styles and shapes less direct, but often reconducible to those first situation of her life.
I'm completely with you. I mean, she used that biography as a narrative, but it was at the, I mean, it had certain points that were facts, but one doesn't have to forget that is a construction that she herself kind of shaped around her work, and that's not only for her very early works, but also, and we will talk about it a little later, also the materials she used in later phases of her works are always kind of connected with her biography. But parallel to this watercolors, she made kind of very traditional oil paintings, mostly portraits that are looking at us in a certain almost naive way. And this naivete also has a connection to the watercolors in terms of style, yeah. but not at all in terms of content. You agree, no?
Really, and or in terms of realization, because the watercolors are very, sort of very fragile, no? Drawings, despite the subjects. But the oil paintings are made of very thick pigment of brushes of painting. And but both have something very similar. For instance, there is no use of perspective, nor in the watercolors, nor in the oil painting. Everything is on the surface of the... She knew, of course, the perspective, but even if she wasn't, she was just self-taught, so she didn't ever study art. But there is no perspective. Everything is in front of you and comes towards you. Mm? And you will see the oil paintings here in the second, maybe, or third room in the exhibition. They are a sort of Matisse style. And actually, Matisse was one of her favorite artists. A sort of abstract, in a way, landscape of the body and of the background.
You mentioned an important point that Carol more or less was a self-taught artist. Mm-hmm. She started to study at the academy, but dropped out and never finished. Do you think kind of her times in the studio of Felice Casorati were kind of her academy?
Not really, because maybe you know that Felice Casorati had a real academy. He had some students, painting students. For instance, some of the major painter in Turin of that time started working with Felice Casorati. Caro Rama, no, she was not a student of Felice Casorati, but Felice Casorati noticed her and helped her. For instance, in her first exhibition, the first exhibition of Caro Rama in 1947 was wanted and suggested by Felice Casorati. Felice Casorati noticed the artist, even if the art and the painting of Carol was so different from the painting of Felice Casorati and of his fellow painters. And there was this kind of... how can I say? There's a sort of painting friendship between them.
I found a very nice quote of Carol referring to her not having studied on an academy. She says, "When I paint, I have no professional skills, no slickness. I have no rules. I've never taken regular courses in painting, nor had I an artistic academic education. This limitation, in the end, has helped me. My technical uncertainty, my not having a method, has become an aspect of my work. And this has helped me a great deal because with the technique left out of this picture, the idea was always very clear. I found that very beautiful and very beautiful. Freeing.
Yeah, she was always free all over her life. Mm?
Yeah, also coming, I mean, freedom is, I think, really a main part, giving you the freedom to do whatever you want. I want to kind of go back a step to the watercolors, mm-hmm. because I think they are also about limitation and freedom, because here in the exhibition we have two walls looking at each other, and on one side of the wall we have depictions kind of related to the psychiatric ward where her mother was, Idue Pini. You see women with no legs, in a wheelchair, not really having any agency. And on the other hand, you have these incredibly free women doing whatever they want, and kind of between these opposites, I think there is the work of Carol Rama.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. But according to me, even the most rude or vulgar, according to somebody, subjects are so delicate that they are a symbol of freedom too, because she's never aggressive, she's never too hard. I remember that when the exhibition I curated in Amsterdam went to Boston, a journalist asked her, please, Carol Rama, what is pornography for you? And she answered, pornography is the silly questions you are doing now. So that's freedom.
Yeah, I think she was quite a character and very outspoken in many ways.
Absolutely. And that was why she was loved and refused by people, and above all by the bourgeois society in Turin. And I liked to have her for dinner, for instance, because she was always very, very, very active, very attractive, and so on. But sometimes she could be very straight on, and in that case, she was not so much loved.
But let's move on a little bit further. I mean, you get the picture right now. We are going through different phases, and that's kind of a core point of Carol Rama's work. Every 10 years, she kind of started a new phase of her work. So in the beginning, she started with the watercolors. Then you are going through a phase with oil paintings. And after that, we are entering a new phase that's a little bit different, because Carol Rama never was part of the group. And maybe she thought in the beginning of the 50s that would be a good idea. So in 1953, she joined the Movimento per l'arte concreta.
Mm-hmm. And it was during the 50s, it was the only time Carol Rama joined a group. But she disliked it. She never, even afterwards, talking of those times, she never remember those times with happiness. And so she went back once again after a few years to work.
Interesting. I think for a certain point, I found also a quote of her: I wanted to become part of a system, a mental order. When I joined the MAC in the 50s, I felt that I had to wean myself from that excess of freedom for which I had been criticized.
Exactly.
I think so too. I think she felt too limited. And yeah, I mean, look around you. What we are sitting here in the first essayistic space where we see many works from different parts of her career, and I think freedom has worked very well for her. So that's why she, in the beginning of the 60s, stopped being part of the mm-hmm. Movimento per l'Arte Concreta and to enter a new journey with the so-called bricolages here on your side. Want to tell a little
yes,
bit about that?
Yes, it's really astonishing how Carorama could change, like Martina said before, every 10 years, more or less. She could change her style of painting, her materials. And I think that after the 50s, when she was constricted in a group, and when her works always repeat the same pattern and so on, in the 60s, there is a sort of bomb. So she could return to her imagination, which was always linked to the first subjects or topics, but with different materials, with different shapes. Nothing was so direct or so clear like in the watercolors, but I have always thought that Carol, using and reusing in a way the same subjects, but transforming them, of course, in every during the different styles of her painting, using the same topics, she could be free from looking for a new subject. So she could focalize her work above all on the painting itself, on the materials, without being involved every work in looking for a new subject, a new topics, and so on. But just working as a painter, just thinking of the painter.
And the material itself is a crucial point because yeah. She kind of left the two-dimensional plane of painting and entered into the third dimension with using more or less everyday objects from all sorts of
what she called
planes.
The refused object.
Exactly.
She liked the objects which have had a life before she used as material for paintings. So she translated, she transferred, she shifted these daily objects from objects which had to work in the daily life as objects for painting. Here we have some wonderful example of this kind of bricolage, for instance.
That's a good point. I mean, these refused objects, I always have the feeling that these are kind of the red thread through all of her work, because if you are looking at the doll's eyes or, I don't know, whatever she used in that period, bicycle inner tubes a little later.
She used the clothes, for instance.
Yeah, and all those, I always had the feeling all those objects are in a certain way a different manifestation of the object that you see in the early watercolors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all of the objects were used objects. And I think that, you know, according to me, Carorama had really a spirit from surrealism. She liked very much the surrealist painters. And according to me, she inherited the kind of shifting of the object from a daily use to a artistic use, like many surrealist artists did, of course, during their life. And she used so many different materials, well, doll eyes, of course, and
yeah.
And but even fabric, even some metal shavings, clothes, and so on, everything. And in her house, we could find a small box with inside some eyes which were sent to her by a taxidermist. So not only doll's eyes, but even glass eyes for taxidermist. So everything.
Yeah, because in some of the bricolages, the eyes are so huge you can you can tell that that can't be doll's eyes.
And, no.
This is very. I mean, many of these bricolages are really uncanny.
Yeah, and she used, for instance, fur, because the mother, when the economy of the family collapsed, the mother had to start working, and she started working with fur and with hats. And so, once again, is something which comes from her early years and which appears once again in her oeuvre.
Mm. What I find an interesting question we didn't really kind of explore in this exhibition is these poor materials, or even in this later phase, the gomme, the bicycle tires she was using, are in a way or not related to the arte povera.
Yeah, exactly. She had not anything to do with arte povera, even if she used a kind of material which was used by arte povera artists or other artists of that time, because Carol Rama used the tires, mostly bicycle tires, as if they were pigment. So we have strips.
So she's painting with tires,
yeah,
in a way.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. She was painting. So the idea is always that of painting, not that of creating in a different way with different materials, something very new, as intellectually speaking.
And also what we said before, that this these materials always related in a way with her own story and her own biography. Here she's saying, tires have given me much joy. Tires remind me of my father, the factory. They remind me of power. But then, this is not completely true, because they were bicycle tires without much importance.
Yeah, that's true. Once again, the family story comes up, but always in a very light way. Sometimes she explained, but it is not the point. The point is that she is an artist. She wants to be considered an artist, and she works as an artist with pigment, always with pigment. Look at there.
And also what I find, we are now in the 70s, the works, the so-called gomme, works with bicycle tires mainly. They are sort of minimalistic in a certain sense, mm-hmm. but on the other hand, and I also find that a red thread, is that they have a very strong sensual quality.
Yes, I think we didn't say before is that she was a self-taught person, but she was very conscious of what was going on in art around her. That's very important, because she attended every opening in her town, and she went to Biennale. She didn't travel a lot, but she was very, how can I say, up to date about what was going on in art. Mm. And actually, for instance, for the bricolage, Mostry of the Bricolage comes up from 1964. And we have to remember that in 1964, Rauschenberg was awarded with the Golden Lion in the Biennale of the 1964. And the same year, a very important new and young gallery in Turin, named Sperone, had an exhibition of works by Rauschenberg.
Which was later also a very important gallery in New York, so we are talking big scale.
Yes. Yeah. In Rome and in New York. Yeah. And Carol Rama, she attended the Biennale, she went around in Turin looking at all the new exhibitions and so on, and in her library we find a lot of books about Rauschenberg. So it means that, of course, the bricolage are a new way of painting to her. But as I said, her production cannot stay aside in respect of what was going on during those times in art.
We just spoke about exhibitions she attended, but let's talk a little bit about her career, or her non-existing or existing career. That would be a point I would like to explore a little bit more. And also the point how she was an outsider or not. I mean, in the context of the bricolages, it's interesting that the notion of the bricolage was brought to her work by a very dear friend of her, Edoardo Sanguinetti, who read the Italian translation of Claude Lévi-Strauss, of Wild Thinking, and kind of transferred this notion to her work. I don't want to go deeper into this, but she had a very important circle of intellectuals around her, no?
Yeah, above all, intellectual or different, how can I say, kind, not artist, but a musician, for instance, like Luciano Berio, a poet like Edoardo Sanguinetti, an architect like Carlo Mollino. And she didn't have many artists, just one or two during her life, but she preferred to have close to her intellectuals of different style. For instance, many people who worked for Einaudi, the very important publishing house in the 50s and 60s in Turin, like Massimo Mila, for instance, or Calvino. And
Massimo Mila was an important anti-fascist too, no?
Yes,
yeah,
too. And so even for this, she was quite an odd person, because she was eager to be as important as the other artists, or at least to be considered as important as the other artists. At the same time, she refused to be in the same field of the other artist.
I think the only artists she was really closer to were Felice Casorati and Man Ray, no?
And Albino Galvano.
Albino Galvano is not very known here, no, but he was very important for the founding of the Movimento.
Yeah, she was above all a philosopher.
A concreta, no. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So those three. Mm-hmm. But let's talk exhibitions. I mean, we're just briefly talking about that the watercolors weren't not shown until, I think, 1979, exactly. And, I mean, she had exhibitions also during her early days. In a way, she was part of the early biennials, but only through the Casorati, no?
She participated in different biennials, and even in, sorry, even in at Quadriennale in Rome, and she had some exhibitions in Turin with an important Turinese gallery, which was La Bussola. But her first exhibition in a public space was exactly in 1985, only in 1985. It was the first exhibition in public space in Milan, curated by La Vergine, wonderful art critic, who was able, La Vergine, to exhibit the watercolors 5 years before in a milestone exhibition which was called L'altra metà dell'avanguardia, where La Vergine in Milan showed works of 100 different artists of the century.
Okay. I have it with me.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a milestone for feminism.
Yeah.
I think it was the first...
The first one.
The first one showing only female artists. And, I mean, Carol Rama was shown then with the likes of... I compiled a little lineup here. We have Frida Kahlo, Georgia O'Keeffe, Natalia Goncharova, yes. Hannah Hoesch.
Yes, and the curious note is that in Carol Rama House, there is the book, a catalog, and the exhibition, even Merit Oppenheim was invited to, to participate in, and close to the text about Merit Oppenheim, there is a writing by Carol Rama with the address of Merit Oppenheim.
Oh, okay.
That's one more important reference of the passion of Carol Rama for surrealism and everything was around the surrealistic spirit.
In the context of this exhibition, here was a question I heard quite frequently is, was Carol Rama a feminist?
Oof. Difficult to say. About her life, sure, she was a feminist, but she never wanted to participate in anything which had the printed, we had the impression of feminist think. Because she was absolutely convinced about, of course, the women were exactly as important as the
men.
And she disliked the ladies, some friends of her, some ladies which she considered quite silly because they were interested in the not important things. So she was, of course, for the valorization of the women, but I think that she didn't want to do it in public, because according to me, it was so inside her, this idea, that it was
a natural thing in a way.
A natural thing, yes.
I mean, she lived in a way a very exceptional life. She lived alone in her studio since 43 in Via Napione until her death, and she was kind of living, I mean, she had to make her living on her own of her art. I mean, that's an interesting point anyway. I mean, at the in very late in her life, she received the Leone d'Oro of the Venice Biennale for lifetime achievement when she was 86, and instead of making
her... was very, very, very angry when she received the
I was saying that instead of making her very happy, she was incredibly angry and said, I was afraid I'd be physically ill. It pissed me off, sure, because if I really am so good, then I don't get why I had to starve for so long, even if I'm a woman. So you have feminism, that's one thing, one important point in that quote, but also, and I would like to go a little bit deeper into that, she was poor, no?
She was very, very poor. And because until 2000, she couldn't sell many works. She had not an international market. So really, she was really very poor. And she could survive because many friends of her helped her, even daily, inviting her for dinner or buying works. Or sometimes when she needed a doctor, she paid the doctor with a work, and so on. So that's the way she lived during her life.
Mm. I have still 2 points. I mean, you knew her.
I was thinking before when you said about the Golden Lion.
Yeah.
What she did, or better, what she said when she received it from the Minister of Culture in Italy, Urbani. And she said, "Oh, how wonderful eyes you have." But not only those. Everybody remained. Because she was such a full of joke. She, yeah, she liked very much to...
I think that's a very important point. I mean, that's not a tragical work. It's also very humorous.
Very, very
in many,
humorous.
Many ways.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. She was a Gesamtkunstwerk.
She,
And her studio.
In a way.
I mean,
her studio.
She and her studio.
Yes, more than she Gesamtwerk, she was a real... actress, according to me, because she was able to be very close to you, very helpful to you, but at the same time, she always acted as an actress, with her better dress, with her perfectly, perfectly put, and so on. Mm. What did you say before about...
I always have the... I mean, I only know her through the anecdotes and and things other people told me, but I always have the feeling that she's performing Carol Rahmer.
Yeah, always, always. And a strange thing is that in her place, in the kitchen, she constructed a sort of gallery of images on a wall, the wall is full of photographs of her, and she always, in every photograph, she always acted as an actress, always. So it's...
Yeah, wonderful. I mean, I found when someone takes my picture, I prepare myself, I put on a costume.
actually, there is not any, I don't know in English, instantanea. Any photograph taken by chance, I mean. But every photograph of her has to be prepared and
stylized. Yeah. And it's an artwork in itself. She's a painter, but she's also a performance artist.
Yeah, and her house, it's a total installation.
Yeah.
Where everything, every object, and there are a lot of objects, you know, everything... has his proper place to be in, and he hasn't to be moved. So it's really it's an installation.
Yeah.
It's, you see some, maybe you saw some photographs here on the staircase.
In the staircase, we have some photographs. You have to go if you're in Turin. I think at the moment it can't be visited, but it will be possible.
No, maybe in autumn, maybe in one month.
Near future,
yes,
in the near future.
The running of the house changed, so they are starting again maybe in November, October, November.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that you can still go there. I mean, it was, I think, I remember you telling that it wasn't so easy to keep that. Thanks that we still are there. For me, it was an immensely, it was really an incredible inspiration and also a huge help to understand this
and to enter
artist.
To enter in her world.
In her world, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You can still see the materials and also the way she lived. I mean, I found it very interesting that all the walls were dark and she never had really actual light. Mm-hmm. All the windows were shut up.
Yes, above all from the 80s, she didn't want to see anything outside because she said that she didn't want to be disturbed. She wanted to be involved only in her imaginary and not to see anything particularly beautiful outside. And even when somebody gave her a bunch of flowers, for instance, she refused. She refused it. Too beautiful. And she always gave it to the neighbor, in front of her.
Wow. I would have loved to know her. We it can was only know her through her work, but that's not nothing.
It was a real present. It was a real present knowing her.
Yeah. I think that's a good stopping point. Thank you so much, Christina, for going through Carol Rama's life and work.
This vision curated by Martina is wonderful. And I think that that is Carol Rama. Thank you, Martina.
Thank you so much, and also thank you for your wonderful collaboration. I really enjoyed it every minute. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.